Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, looking out and still kind of an overcast Sunday morning here in downtown Chicago, but still beautiful weather, good temperatures. As I said, get out and enjoy this day today. Well, joining me on the phone is my good friend, former Tribune colleague, and now one of the top political reporters for Bloomberg, John McCormick. John, thanks very much for joining me.
Hey, thanks, brother.
Hey, I wanted to bring this up. We have a new ABC News Washington Post poll that came out overnight that has Hillary Clinton up 50% to 42% over Donald Trump nationally. And one of the dominant themes that Gary Langer found in his analysis is that Trump's ratings in general haven't worsened. They just haven't improved. And the trouble list is long. 79% of Americans say he doesn't show enough respect for people he disagrees with. 70% express anxiety about a Trump presidency. 67% thinks he lacks the personality and temperament it takes to serve effectively. 64% doubt his understanding of world affairs. 63% see him unfavorably overall. 62% say he's not honest and trustworthy. 61% think he's unqualified for office. And 60% think he's biased against women and minorities. Against that backdrop, it's still a contest.
It is, and it's August. It's early. You know, anything can happen. But the string of polls that have come out in the last week have been pretty devastating for Trump, this one included. You know, if you drill down on the internals on this poll, one thing that jumped out at me was college-educated white women. So the Washington Post ABC poll shows that Clinton really has had a big jump since mid-July with this group, and it's an important group. In the general election, she now leads Trump by 19 points among college-educated women. And their last poll, they were fairly evenly split. So that's just a huge jump in that one demographic. There's another poll out this morning by Morning Consult, and it shows the horse race, you know, similar, Clinton at 46, Trump at 37. But one of the internals that really jumped out at me on that one is Trump has lost ground with independents. And, of course, independent voters are, you know, ultimately the people who typically decide presidential elections. And in the past week, Trump's support with independents has slipped from 38% to 34%. Meanwhile, Clinton has ticked up with independents 2 points. She's up to 34%. So, you know, the convention bounces are starting to sort of settle down, and Trump obviously had a terrible news week last week. He's going to try to turn it around with an economic speech in Detroit on Monday. And Clinton just announced this morning as well that she's going to follow up on Thursday with a speech about the economy in Michigan. So the theme of the week is shaping up to be jobs and the economy. Whether it really sticks to that, we'll know, because as we all know, Trump can go off script pretty easily.
It may depend on if he's using a teleprompter in Detroit on Monday or not.
Yeah, I suspect his Paul Manafort will be hoping to keep him on that teleprompter.
We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome back to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick, to your guests. I wanted to ask you a question about national polls. Just how much do they reflect individual states, because you pretty much know that this election is going to come down to those key battlegrounds, particularly some of them in the Midwest. But even looking at past presidential elections, how close have the national polls came to being reflective in some of these states? Thanks,
Ron.
Rick.
Thank you, Ron. And John, you've done your share of poll reporting.
Yeah. They have a fairly good track record. The exception in 2012 was Gallup, which really kind of choked in the final weeks of the poll, showed Romney surging and you know, potentially winning. And Gallup has done some under-the-hood work where they say they've made improvements to their poll for this presidential election. But the caller makes an important point. I mean, what ultimately does matter is battleground states. Typically, we think of that as, you know, 10 to 12 states. This year, it may be a few less. You know, Clinton seems to be, you know, by picking Tim Kaine in Virginia, she may have shored up her support there. Virginia is typically a battleground state. Colorado has been a battleground state, but it also has a large Hispanic population. And because of that, Trump is not doing well in Colorado, so that one may fall off.
I was going to say, the word was that she had pulled advertising buys in Colorado.
Yeah, and Virginia. So the battleground states may be a little fewer than normal. We may be looking at more like 6 or 8 states. Obviously, Florida is always going to be in the mix there, Ohio. But the caller makes the point that, you know, what's the difference between battleground state polls and national polls? And the reality is that two tend to reflect each other. If somebody is well ahead in a national poll, it's unusual for them not to have at least some lead in the battleground states as well. So we're going to see more battleground state polls coming out, I'm sure, in the next week, as we're going to continue to see more national polls. And, a lot of folks encourage you to look at sort of the trend line in these polls, that, you know, they're a snapshot in time. They can fluctuate a lot. But if you're Hillary Clinton, you like the trend line. And again, it's August. It's early. A lot can happen. But I would very much rather be her than him right now if I was trying to win the presidency.
You know, speaking of polls, too, and I know there's been a lot of chatter about a poll that showed Hillary Clinton up in Georgia. And, you know, it's I think it's worth talking about, but I don't know that that's necessarily a trend line or not.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about that. I mean, if Barack Obama could not carry the state of Georgia as the first African-American president, and it's a state that has a large African-American population, I'm skeptical that Hillary Clinton would be able to win Georgia. But it may be a place where she will go spend some time and money as sort of a head fake. Same thing in Arizona. It's very, very hard to believe that a Democrat could carry Arizona. But the state has a growing Hispanic population, and, you know, they may spend some resources there that could force Trump to then go spend resources and try to defend those states to keep them red.
In essence, by talking about how the number of battleground states is actually kind of shrunk, that also means that the window for Trump, the roadmap for Trump, gets a lot tougher.
Yeah, it is a tough map. Even if he was a sort of normal, don't offend large segments of the electorate sort of candidate, the map does has an advantage for Democrats at this point just because of the nation's changing demographics. And if some of these other states start falling off, or if there are red states, people talk some about Utah, even a very reliably
right.
Republican state, but Trump has offended Mormons and really went after Mitt Romney, who is a local hero there. So, I mean, if Trump has to go defend Utah, things could get a little bizarre. Not that they're not already somewhat bizarre, but the map is just unusual, and it really puts great emphasis on states like Philadelphia and Ohio. Those two states.
Pennsylvania.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I wonder why you've got Philadelphia on your mind.
Yeah. Those two states just seem like absolute must-wins for Trump, and probably Florida as well. I mean, it seems if he can't win those three states, he's probably not going to be the next president.
But, you know, when you look at Ohio, of course, you look at there's Governor Kasich, who's very popular among Republicans in Ohio. And the fact of, obviously, you know, boycotting the home state Republican National Convention in Cleveland, still out on the hustlings, was here in Illinois just the other day, raising money for Mark Kirk and State House Republican leader Jim Durkin. But, you know, making no bones about, you know, the animosity that exists between himself and the Republican presidential nominee.
Yeah, and then how does that translate to the grassroots feeling in Ohio for Donald Trump? I mean, if you're Trump, ideally you want a popular home state governor, rowing as hard as he possibly can in the boat for you to try to win Ohio. I'm not sure Trump can count on Kasich for doing that. And so, again, that just puts, you know, added pressure on him, and the map and the path for him is narrow, and there's not a lot of margin of error, room for margin of error.
No, and having, and when you have a governor, and plus in Kasich's way, he's a two-term governor, and you have the operation, you have the Republican Party of Ohio motivated, Without that, here we have Trump, who has not demonstrated a great deal of organizational instincts, being forced to try to, rev up grassroots Republican support in Ohio.
Yeah, largely by himself. I was on a flight back from Philadelphia a week ago with David Axelrod, another Chicago Tribune alum. And
yes,
I should note he was in first class and I was in economy plus. But that said, I had a good chance to chat with him for a while, and he made the point, and I think it's an important one, that with Trump it's sort of a one man show. He is the show. And with Clinton, she's going to have this army of surrogates. We were talking about Kasich and how he won't be there for Trump. Clinton's going to have the president, Michelle Obama, Joe Biden, a whole stable of surrogates who can go out and appeal to specific demographic niches or states. You know, there's talk of probably sending the president to North Carolina, where there's a large African-American population, and maybe, turning North Carolina blue. And so Trump just doesn't have a big bench. There's not a lot of people who are going to be out there campaigning for him actively. You know, we can maybe talk about the Paul Ryan situation up in Wisconsin. But
yes, we're going to do that in just a second.
It's hard to envision Paul Ryan going out and campaigning for Donald Trump in the state of Wisconsin, where, Hillary Clinton will have all of these people out getting the vote mobilized for her.
We're speaking with John McCormick, political reporter for Bloomberg. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Joining me on the phone, my good friend John McCormick, political reporter for Bloomberg. John, we were, before the break, we were talk about Ohio, but let's also talk about Wisconsin. And of course, you look at the dynamics here. You've got Paul Ryan facing a minor primary challenge, but a challenge that in some respects Donald Trump seemed to have endorsed up until he shows up in Green Bay on Friday and reads from a statement his endorsement of Paul Ryan's reelection.
Yeah, another sort of bizarre moment in this presidential campaign with lots of bizarre moments. I mean, if you think about it, that made national news headlines that the Republican presidential nominee had actually endorsed the top elected official in the Republican Party.
Right.
I mean, it's something that would just normally be completely taken for granted. It would be a non-event. It would be a non-story. But because of Trump, it had become a fairly significant story with him, saying nice things about Ryan's opponent, in this primary that they're going to have up in Wisconsin on Tuesday, and sort of creating this real angst in the party, and then when Trump was asked point blank by the Washington Post, in the middle of the week whether, he would be endorsing Ryan or not, he, gave this sort of snarky response that he was still thinking about and sort of echoing the language.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah, echoing the language that Ryan had used when he was contemplating whether or not to endorse Trump, which ultimately he did. So that became, a distraction for the party. Again, it was, two or three days where they're not talking about Hillary Clinton and, what their plan is for the country. I went up to Janesville, I think it was on Wednesday, and did a quick story for Thursday morning. And, I detected no groundswell of support for Trump, for Ryan's opponent. Both of us have come from the newspaper that once reported that, Dewey defeated Truman. So I never predict elections before they've actually happened. But I'm pretty sure Ryan's going to win that primary on Tuesday. And, in some ways, Ryan forced Trump to, double back and almost had the stronger hand in the situation because, he came out with a statement and said, well, we've never asked Donald Trump for his endorsement. We don't really care whether he endorses us or not. We're focused on the people of Wisconsin and, moving the nation forward.
Yeah, I thought there was that statement that was issued, I think, by the Wisconsin Republican Party.
The speaker up there also sort of had a, welcome to Wisconsin.
That's the one I was thinking about. Yeah, this is not Donald Trump's Wisconsin.
Yeah, and of course Trump hadn't. He was defeated in the presidential primary in April in Wisconsin. Ted Cruz beat him quite handily there. So, again, in an ideal situation, Trump would be coming into a unified Republican Party in Wisconsin where they were rallying behind him and maybe be able to put the state in play. you know, it's one of those Rust Belt, if you will, states that is supposedly so essential to Trump. But you know, he sort of stepped on the situation with the Ryan endorsement, and you know, it just created more bad blood in the party.
Well, besides the Wisconsin primary on Tuesday, you also have Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson too, who is could be endangered.
Absolutely. I mean, that race is you know, expected to be very close, just like the race in Illinois. It's one of the, you know, two or three most closely watched Senate races in the country. And, you know, Ron Johnson took a pass. He didn't show up in Green Bay on Friday night. He had other things to do other than go appear at a rally with Donald Trump. So it sends you the signal that a lot of these candidates want to keep a good, healthy distance from Trump and try to run their own individual races in these states.
But can that succeed?
It's certainly unusual. I mean, you usually would see Senate candidates and presidential candidates closely aligned, and they would be working together. Their campaigns, you know, would have a consolidated operations in these states, and pool resources and share databases and all that sort of thing. And that doesn't appear to be likely to happen in most of these states where, you know, Trump is. Doesn't have strong poll numbers.
I thought it was interesting, Jonathan Martin's story in the New York Times about how, you know, there's even the work underway to have some of these down ballot candidates advertising that basically says, elect me as a Republican to be a check and a balance on a Clinton presidency.
Yeah, absolutely. They're almost acknowledging the fact that, you know, Clinton's going to win, and therefore we, you know, don't want to give the Senate and the House over to the Democrats as well.
But, of course, you know, it's the Senate, for the most part, that really is the one that's in play. I think, 30 seats would be the House, for example.
Yeah, that seems much less likely to happen.
Not that Ryan isn't worried about it and wanting to energize fundraisers about it, too.
Right. Now, the Republicans are likely to keep control of the House, and the Senate is much more on the bubble. But, if you're a senator in a close state like Wisconsin or New Hampshire, you can see why you might, you know, not cozy up to a guy who's, you know, viewed as a pretty controversial candidate, especially among those independent voters that you need to win those races.
I mean, and as you say, and everybody needs to take all of this with the fact that, you know, we're still more than 90 days away from the election. Things, as I often say in politics and elections, sometimes can be influenced by things that are not beyond the candidate's control.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there could be additional email issues that arise with Clinton. You know, there could be world events, there could be terrorist attacks, all kinds of things that can influence the mood of the country. And you know, on the face of it, this is a good year for a Republican candidate. I mean, typically people want to change party in the White House after one party's controlled it for an extended period of time. And, you know, there's certainly a mood, if you look in the polling, for change in Washington. And Clinton is not a candidate who, you know, really exudes change in Washington. So the fundamentals of the lay of the land are favorable for Trump. It's just whether he can, you know, be disciplined enough and convince people that he has the temperament to be president.
That's my good friend John McCormick, political reporter for Bloomberg. John, we'll see you out on the campaign trail.
Thank you, sir.
We'll be back with more right after this.